Hey guys, really fun show for you on this Wrestling Nostalgia episode where we take a look back at the very first SmackDown that debuted on the UPN network. That occurred on August 26, 1999, headlined by The Rock versus Triple H for the WWF Championship and Shawn Michaels as the special guest referee. We're going to go through the card, of course, listen to some audio, and go through some other things. Let's get everything started right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
All right, guys, let's get into your Wrestling Nostalgia Show, one of my favorite shows of the week. And I know that some of you also feel the same way, so we're going to get things rolling again in just a second. But first, I'd like to welcome you to the show. If you're new, I know we do have some listeners that are new. You can check us out anywhere that podcasts are available, and we're here six times a week, sometimes more. We do a whole lot of audio here, more than most, I would say. I would say that there are a very select few out there that do as much audio as we do, and I'm proud of that. I'm certainly looking to maybe add more shows, but that would mean adding more time, of which I'm not a magician, so I can't create that, but we're certainly looking into it. And, you know, listen, I'll put this out there quickly, and if you're interested in potentially contributing in an audio fashion to the show, meaning if you'd like to cover something maybe that we don't cover here or provide an alternate perspective, get in touch with me, realwwepodcast@gmail.com, and let me know what you're thinking about, because adding another show may not be a bad idea. Because we do have a day or two, believe it or not, that we don't have any audio dropping. We have six shows, but sometimes we have multiple shows drop it in one day. So maybe on, say, Friday, you'd like to drop a show to my listeners, let me know. Again, if you're interested, previous audio experiences preferred, and obviously a passion for wrestling, which I assume you have if you're here. So the other thing is that if you guys want to listen to or actually watch a really awesome YouTube channel, and I'm plugging this because I love it. It's not because I'm getting paid to say this. It is the Botch Guy on YouTube. Loves wrestling just as much as we do here, and is entertaining as hell, and reacts to moments that happen on Raw and SmackDown and pay-per-views, and is just really well done, very easy to watch and listen to. And believe it or not, him and I are going to be doing a collaborative SummerSlam review. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for the details of exactly what day and time that will be dropping. And maybe you'll even see yours truly on a video stream. So that is certainly the goal. But check out the Botch Guy. He has, I mean, like 66,000 and counting subscribers. One of the fastest growing YouTube pro wrestling analysis channels that are out there. And so we're looking forward to working with the Botch Guy and being able to just talk some wrestling, because that's what the fun part is, right? That's why we're here. That's why you're listening to my voice as we speak, or as I speak. Okay, so head on over to the website, though, by the way, wwepodcast.com. And I say that not just because we have all of our podcasts there, and I'm working on tweaking some things myself and learning how to, you know, design a website, and not just like the plug and play and drop stuff. Not like, hey, drag and drop your image here. No. Like, actually, I don't want to get into coding and stuff, but it's heading that way. So I'm learning on doing it myself instead of trying to pay people lots of money to do it. But also the reason I'm inviting you to the website is because we have a new contributor there, and Cody Churchill, who has dropped an article on the website about women's wrestling, if it has truly and finally taken over the men's division in WWE. Very well written. It'll make you think. And check it out. It's on our featured page, on the homepage. But also, if you click on opinions, it's there too. So check it out. It's really worth the read. Short, quick read, but certainly well written. And I think it'll get your gears going. Alrighty. Well, today we are diving into the first SmackDown. Now, you may be saying to yourself, If you are, if you, you've been watching wrestling as long as I have, you went through the Attitude Era, and you remember the first SmackDown, you may be saying, hey, whoa, wait a minute, Matt, wait. This isn't the first SmackDown. August 26th was not the first SmackDown ever debuted. And you would be right. April of 1999 actually was the very first episode of SmackDown. And it essentially used the same Raw set. It was a test run, and it went very well. And it was debuted on UPN. And I guess you could say that the August 26th episode, because it went from April till August till he had another SmackDown episode, was the debut of the weekly SmackDown series. So April was kind of a one-off test run, and then we went to the every week starting August 26th, 1999. That was the start of the weekly SmackDown as we know it today, and has yet to take a week off. Yeah, holidays sometimes interfere with that. But amid 9/11, amid any world disasters or world pandemics, SmackDown rolls on. I mean, it hasn't missed a beat. And it's been 21 years now since SmackDown has debuted. And I'm considering this really the debut SmackDown. Okay, I understand it's April for those of you that are looking at the dates and Googling it and thinking I'm, you know, a fool. I understand it's April, but I'm considering the weekly debut of that show started in August 26th. And to be honest, I think the August 26th version of SmackDown had a lot more going for it anyway, with the main event being The Rock versus Triple H for the WWF Championship. And guess who was the special guest referee? Yeah, HBK, which was probably the biggest wild card of the entire match, and it certainly proved to be that. I remember, we'll get into it. But in honor of the first inaugural weekly series of SmackDown, I think you might remember this, or maybe it's a new theme to you, but take a listen. I'm sure that many of you just had a nostalgic flashback. And when that guitar string hits, you remember The Rock just, The Rock's face, right? I mean, you can picture this intro. This intro is iconic for SmackDown. And that was the very first original theme for SmackDown. And that was called, let me look at the name of this thing. The name of this was Everybody on the Ground. So that was quite an iconic theme. Maybe I'll do a show on just themes for shows as they've evolved over the years. And that certainly brings you back, doesn't it? That's what it's all about, right? That's what this is about, is nostalgia. Hence the Wrestling Nostalgia episode. So, by the way, guys, I'll also be doing, I have another voicemail from another listener. I'll be getting to in just a few minutes towards maybe the middle of the show for a break type thing. And then obviously we'll finish out with SmackDown, the main event. Okay, but let's look at the rest of the card. Because beyond The Rock versus Triple H, what was and who was on this card? Well, let's look at the results. And, of course, I had to Google this. You think I remember? I mean, let's be real. In a dark match. Yes, a dark match. It was Kurt Angle defeating the California Kid in a dark match. How about that? And this is also, don't forget, Kurt Angle was to win his very first WWF championship against The Rock in October of 2000. So Kurt Angle was still getting off of his feet at this point. Wasn't really 100% in front of the audience, so to speak, in front of the camera. So in a dark match, yeah, Kurt Angle defeating the California Kid. Amazing. Kurt Angle wasn't even featured on TV here. Just crazy. Okay, and another dark match, we got several here. I mean, there's like five of them here. Edge with Christian defeated Matt Hardy, who was with Jeff Hardy, right? And boy, that is certainly one that you look at and you go, how are they also in the dark? How are they in the dark match? Why aren't they featured on the show, right? Well, you have to remember the time frame. August of 1999. This is prior to TLC. TLC wasn't a thing. TLC didn't exist yet. The first TLC match didn't take place until SummerSlam of 2000. So, yeah, we were still a year away from anyone even knowing what TLC meant. So you can forget all those high spots that Jeff and Matt Hardy and Christian and Edge and the Dudley Boys, when they came along, you can forget all those highlights. They didn't exist in our brains yet. So this is Edge with Christian defeating Matt Hardy versus with Jeff Hardy. Now, at this time, Edge had certainly removed himself from the Brood. So he was on a singles venture with now Christian, as they are a team, as Matt and Jeff Hardy are. But this is prior, again, to all the TLC stuff. And does anyone ever... I know this is a bit of a sidebar. If you don't know who the Brood are, I would recommend you just YouTube them. I don't ever know... As I look back, because I'm thinking of Edge, who was a part of the Brood, with Gangrel, that group, I feel like, never really got off of the ground. From what I can recall, they did get involved with the Ministry. And I know that they merged with the Ministry of Darkness and that whole deal when it eventually became the corporate ministry. So it was basically half the roster against Stone Cold Steve Austin, which is what the whole purpose of the whole thing was. And it was really the world against Stone Cold Steve Austin. But the Brood itself actually originally consisted of Edge and Christian and Gangrel. So not just Edge, as I'm thinking back here, but also Christian. So they broke off and were no longer a part of the Brood. But if you don't know who the Brood are, again, Google it, YouTube it. They were like, I guess, modern day vampires, and Gangrel would be coming through the stage holding a chalice of blood, usually. And certainly, like, very, very kind of demonic, just, I guess, scary music. I mean, I was only 13 years old at the time that this group was doing their thing. And I don't know ever know what the purpose of them was, right? Like, what were they? Does anybody have an answer for me? Like, what was the purpose of the Brood? I know they were primarily positioned as heels. But I don't know what they were. I don't remember them getting a lot of mic time. It was just the visual of the blood in his cup, and it would be all over his teeth that had, you know, Gangrel put in vampire teeth. I mean, I'm serious. He certainly looked the part, but it was bizarre. I don't know what to make of it, other than it just being sports entertainment-y. But anyway, I'm not ratting on the group. I just don't know what the purpose of them are. So anyway, circling back. Boy, see how quickly I get lost, but that's what nostalgia does, so I'm not really apologizing. It's just kind of the way it goes with nostalgia. So the next match was D'Lo Brown defeating Hardcore Holly with Crash Holly by DQ. And from what I gather, again, I don't remember this match itself, but the D'Lo Brown vest. Does anybody remember the vest that he wore? As he claimed that he had broken ribs, and then he just continued to wear it at an obscene length and way beyond anybody that would have been injured that long with broken ribs. It was a chest protector, but he'd use it as a weapon. I actually, looking back, kind of liked it, but at the same time, my brain of 35 years old and looking at wrestling in a more critical way of things that just should make sense is why would the WWE officials allow him to wear that chest protector, knowing that, yeah, it protects him, but he could also use it as a weapon if he does his splash, and that's what he did, and clearly used it to win many matches. So it's cool. It's kind of definitely a heat grabber, but I don't know how it could be applicable to today in today's logic. But then again, today's logic sometimes doesn't exist. So, just like this past week on Raw, when Sasha Banks clearly threw the belt to Asuka and tried to pull an Eddie Guerrero, that just did not happen. It just didn't happen. The referee turned around too quick, and she did the whole belt throwing and tried to get Asuka disqualified, but the referee clearly saw it, but he wasn't supposed to, and you could tell that was the case. We all know, here's the thing, and the whole Sasha Banks tribute to Eddie Guerrero, we all know Snoop Dogg's your cousin. We all know that you were inspired by Eddie Guerrero. We get it. We get it. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I think many fans looked at Eddie Guerrero as one of the top guys ever to do this, especially in his death and looking back on his career. But I don't need now Sasha Banks to start mimicking Eddie Guerrero. Particularly, Eddie Guerrero was a heel, a beloved heel. Sasha Banks is a true heel, not a beloved heel. Eddie Guerrero was charmingly good at being a heel, which kind of made him a babyface. He turned the three cardinal sins into something you could cheer for. Think about that. Lying, cheating, and stealing. You don't need to be Christian to know that they're part of the Ten Commandments. And he took those things and was able to make it something so endearing and enjoyable to watch that even though he did those things, you still were rooting for him to cheat in a match. Who the hell else does that? Name today one person that is able to cheat in a match, purposely cheat, know they're going to cheat, and cheer for them to cheat so they can get the victory. It's really counterintuitive to most heel logic, which made what Eddie Guerrero did even more amazing. The ability for him to play with emotion was absolutely crazy. So I don't need Sasha Banks mimicking a guy that used it as really, he did it in a heel fashion, but it was so endearing and well done and fit his character so perfectly that it was actually a babyface move. So I don't know why Sasha was doing this. We get it. You're tripping to Eddie. That's great. But it didn't make sense. And it was well badly executed. Okay. See how quickly we go down the rabbit hole. Okay, so that's the third dark match. The fourth dark match. Val Venus defeated Mark Henry. Wow. All right. I'm sure many of you know who Mark Henry is. Does anybody out there, raise your hand, class, know who Val Venus is? Anybody? Well, Val Venus, as you remember, because I'm going to assume you do. It was a rhetorical question, by the way. I don't know really where the apex of this man's career was. Maybe it was as the ladies' man, the ex-porn star, or maybe Choppy Choppy Your PP. Anybody remember that with Kai and Tai? I remember that actually closed Raw. You're so used to in the Attitude Era. Having Stone Cold Steve Austin come out to beat somebody up or in the main event, or you're waiting for that glass to crash. And it was, I remember, such a stark difference. I don't know what was going on with Austin that week. Maybe it was hunting season, and he got usually a week or two off or 3 weeks off during hunting season in the WWF. And maybe that's the reason, but I just remember it was like, wait, what? How are these guys closing the show? And if you remember, Kai and Tai had found that Yamaguchi-san, his wife, I think his name was actually Yamaguchi-san, right? I'm really drawing from a deep, deep memory here, had an affair. His wife had an affair with Val Venus, and it was discovered that this happened. And they threatened Val Venus at the beginning of the show, saying that they're going to choppy-choppy his pee-pee, and they brought out a big salami as a demonstration and put it on like a piece of wood or a chopping block and took a samurai sword and sliced it in half and gave Val Venus a visual as to what they're going to do. And actually, at the end of the match, we had Val Venus flirting with Val Venus was in the main event. I don't remember who he was facing. And Kai and Tai ended up beating him down in the main event and carrying him to the back. And they put him in a back room, a locker room somewhere. And Yamaguchi-san had a samurai sword and was going to do exactly what he said he was going to do at the beginning of the show. And as he lifts the sword, the lights go out and you hear the sword hit and people go, oh, And you're thinking, oh my God, did he really slice off Val Venus's, you know what, right? I mean, I remember just like thinking that was the closing segment of Raw. It kept me watching. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous, but that's what wrestling was in the 90s, late 90s particularly. So anybody else remember that? I'd love to know what you guys think about this, because I don't know why the hell that my brain drove into Kai and Tai land with, who was it? Taka Michinoku. Maybe that's who he faced in the main event. I'll have to look that up sometime. So anyway, Val Venus, or maybe actually, here's where I was going. Val Venus's career apex was as Chief Morley with Eric Bischoff. Maybe that's the apex of his career. I know that actually Val Venus had a match with Stone Cold Steve Austin during the Attitude Era as he challenged Austin. I remember one Monday night and Austin said, I'll accept your stupid challenge. Really saying that I don't have to lower myself to beat you, but I'm going to anyway. And I don't know. Where do you think Val Venus's career apex was? Where is it? I might have been Chief Morley, you could argue. He got more camera time that way. But I know that actually Val Venus is really into cannabis. And I know I think he was on Jericho's podcast a number of years ago talking about cannabis and being an advocate for it. So I don't know, for whatever that's worth. But it was Val Venus defeating Mark Henry in a dark match. Okay, final dark match. Yeah, we're still in the dark matches. There were five dark matches. So Gangrel defeated Chaz with Mariana. Why do I not remember her? I don't know. Mariana or Mariana? Oh, boy. I actually cannot tell you. I'm the host of this show, and I don't know who Mariana is. If I saw her, I probably would know. But I talked to you guys earlier about Gangrel, if you remember him, defeating Chaz. Really, it seems like kind of a forgettable match. So let's move on here to the main show. Mr. Ass defeated Jeff Jarrett with Miss Kitty and Deborah. So Jeff Jarrett's still around here. Mr. Ass, from Billy Gunn to Mr. Ass, is in a program here with Jeff Jarrett. And boy, oh boy, isn't it funny, 21 years later, if we had anyone called Miss Kitty, if any woman in the WWE was called Miss Kitty today, holy cow, it would be an uproar. There would be an uproar, an absolute uproar. So just crazy the way that things have evolved. But Mr. Ass was victorious on this night, defeating Jeff Jarrett. All right, let's take a little bit of a break and listen to the voicemail that the show got, and we'll respond to it right now.
Hey, man, how's it going? Anthony here. I just had a real quick question to run by you. I was debating with my buddy the other day about what would have happened if The Rock never left and what kind of impacts it would have had on the careers of other WWE superstars like John Cena, Randy Orton, and Batista, who came up right after the time where The Rock left in about 2004, 2005. What brand do you think he would have been on? I just want to get your thoughts on that. And I think that it's a really cool topic to have, because when The Rock bowed out full time in 2002, 2003, he was still right on top of his game. Anyway, man, I hope to hear back from you on your show, and I'll talk to you soon.
Oh, wow. I really had no idea that that was Anthony. I didn't screen any of these before I played them. I just did it as is, and glad to hear from you, Anthony. So I didn't expect it, but hey, cool. So here's what I think about The Rock. That's a deep topic. All right, this could be a show in and of itself, but I'll give you the short version of it. And I'll say this. Had The Rock not gone to Hollywood, had The Rock decided to stay in WWE and flesh out the rest of his career, because yes, he was at the top of his game in 2002, 2003, 2004. He came back. He did some Mick Foley WrestleMania stuff at WrestleMania 20. He came back and occasionally showed himself on Raw to help Eugene or to make an appearance here and there. But he never really obviously came back and just slowly evolved into a Hollywood figure. That being said, the easiest question for me to answer out of the the pile of questions that you gave me was, I think The Rock would have been drafted to SmackDown. He feels like a SmackDown guy. He coined the phrase SmackDown, layeth the smacketh down, right? So I think he would have been a great face of SmackDown. At the same time, you would have liked to have Austin leading Raw, but Austin had left after his final match in March of 2003. So the question would have been, who was going to lead Raw, right? I mean, you could have John Cena. Undertaker always feels like a SmackDown guy. He just feels SmackDown for whatever reason. And so I think The Rock would have been on SmackDown. But Vince always treats Raw like it's his first child. I mentioned this on my show last night. Vince feels and will always feel, and we continue to see evidence of it, that Raw is his firstborn child and SmackDown is the forgotten redheaded stepchild that lives in the broom cupboard under the stairs. That's how a lot of times SmackDown feels. It just does. So I'll say SmackDown, but I wouldn't bet the farm on it, and we'll never know. But that's my answer. Yeah, as far as how long he would have lasted, probably into, I'd say, the mid to possibly late 2000s, depending on his work schedule, or his taxing on his body is what I should say. Probably to the, he might have made it to the beginning of the PG era, wrestling on a semi full-time basis, but probably phasing out by that point. And then coming in occasionally for a WrestleMania match. He would have probably adopted the Undertaker's schedule of WrestleManias only starting around 2010. That would have been my guess, but probably full-time from 2002 to 2006, 2007. And then started to realize, hey, you know, I can't do this full-time gig much longer. Let me start to look at the long-term health of my body, my family. What do I want out of my life beyond wrestling? And started to pull back around 2007, 2008. And then into the PG era, which would not have been kind to his character. And same to Austin's. Thank God these characters didn't exist or weren't thought of during the PG era. But I think he would have been handcuffed in the PG era. Same with Austin, obviously, but yeah, that's my answer. Is I think he would have been going till 2007, 2008, and then on Undertaker schedule thereafter. So as far as Batista, he would have had some great opponents. Certainly, him and John Cena, had it actually happened in organically and not after the fact. I know they had their two WrestleMania matches. I understand, but I'm talking a full week to week program. That could have happened. That would have been a lot of fun. You could have had Rock Undertaker. You could have had Rock Shawn Michaels. The beloved match that never happened, The Rock versus Shawn Michaels. That is something that we all would have loved to have seen. But him and Batista. There's so much potential there. But again, we'll never know other than video games what the outcomes would be. I mean, that's the only way to play our matchups is talking about it, or in fantasy land of video games. So yeah, those are my thoughts. Again, Moy, you look at the potential rivalries that he could have had. It is unsettling because you're so excited about something that's never going to happen. So great to hear from you, Anthony, and we'll definitely have to have you back on the show soon. Alrighty, well, let's get back to the first SmackDown that happened on a weekly basis. In August of 1999. So let's go down the card. The next was the Unholy Alliance, as they were then known. The Undertaker and Big Show, that's who that was, with Paul Bearer, defeated Kane and X-Pac and APA, which were Bradshaw and Farouk. Not JBL yet. He was then not known as JBL, just Bradshaw. In a triple threat tag team match to retain the WWF Tag Team Championship. So The Undertaker and Big Show were champions. They defeated Kane and X-Pac, and then the APA. I do not remember that. I'm going to have to go back and watch this whole thing in full. I watched snippets of it. Obviously, the main event is the key here, and we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. But, boy, they were then known as the Unholy Alliance. That is, I remember Jim Ross saying that, but I didn't know that was the actual name of the group. That makes sense. Undertaker and Big Show. Yeah, definitely. And my God, Paul Bearer, what an unsung hero he was for The Undertaker and Kane's characters. Boy, oh boy. I mean, Paul Bearer was just, you couldn't ask for a better manager. Yeah, he didn't really take a bump that often, but I don't think he needed to, because he's so damn good at his facial expressions were better than any manager I've ever seen. That includes Bobby the Brain Heenan. That includes Paul Heyman. I'm talking facial expressions, not talking ability of promo or ability to take a bump. We all know that Bobby the Brain Heenan took bumps probably better than any manager could. But anyway, Kane and X-Pac were a team. I don't think for long, because I do recall Tombstone Torrey, and that happened, I believe, in 2000. So Kane gets in a relationship with Torrey, and X-Pac ends up being a girlfriend stealer, I think. And Kane gets angry at X-Pac and Torrey, and ends up tombstoning Torrey. Not Torrey Wilson, but I think she was just Torrey. I don't know if she had a last name. But the crowd popped like crazy. Just blew up. You ever want to see something that is one of the best Kane clips you've ever seen? And I'm talking like one that will give you goosebumps. And that is in Smack. If you Google this, I'm going to Google or YouTube it. Kane Returns 2000. That's exactly what you need to YouTube. If you return or YouTube, Kane Returns 2000. It's the very first search result, and it will give you goosebumps. This is not where he tombstones Torrey. You can search that out. That's on SmackDown. This is a Raw clip. But Kane, just search like Tombstone Torrey and you'll see it. The crowd loses their minds. But this one to me might have been Kane's biggest moment of his career in terms of pop and just the reaction from the crowd. And this is also a time, don't forget, Stone Cold's not around. He was out for surgery. So, okay, back to the card here. Big Boss Man defeated Al Snow to win the Hardcore Championship. Big Boss Man. Wow. All right. And Al Snow. Here's a funny story that you guys are going to get a kick out of. I did not understand Al Snow's entrance music. And I didn't get the pun about what does everybody want? What does everybody need? Right? I didn't understand. I thought he literally was talking about the mannequin head, which in his world he was. But there's also the secondary implication of what it is, right? So I felt like quite an idiot. And honestly, that kind of shows and speaks to my innocence at that age, which I guess is a good thing. I guess that's a good thing, but depending on your view. But I didn't get it. I did not get it at that time, even at 13 years old. Did anybody else understand it? I'm probably the only idiot out there. It took me some time to, after Al Snow had come and gone, you know, into my 20s, I'm thinking, you know, just, he just kind of popped in my head randomly. And I'm like, how did I not get that? Right. How did I not get that? So just something to laugh at or just shake your head at, like, how did you not get that, bro? I don't know. I just didn't. I just didn't. 'Cause he literally had a mannequin head. So that's what I thought he was referring to. I'm like, why does everybody need the mannequin head? That doesn't make sense to me. So, I feel like a fool. But Big Boss Man, the most iconic memories I have of Boss Man, as we're kind of going through character by character here, and having Big Boss Man win the Hardcore Championship, which is today's 24/7 title equivalent. Although I would argue the Hardcore Championship had more value, because I don't think it changed hands nearly as much as it does today with the 24/7 title. Big Boss Man, I remember two things. Being the handyman for Vince McMahon and trying to take out Stone Cold. And I also remember him hanging from the cell. Literally hanging with a noose as Undertaker defeated him at WrestleMania in Hell in a Cell. Undertaker literally hung the Boss Man, the Big Boss Man, from the cell. Think about that. Think about that today. Oh my God. Imagine if WWE hung somebody from anything, much less a cell with a noose. I can't even think about that. I mean, I'm not offended. Honestly, you have to really make an effort, concerted effort to offend me. That does not offend me. But imagine today's audience and sponsors and super sensitive people losing their minds over this. I mean, WWE would be shut down in a week. So just if you don't believe me, and it might be off the WWE Network, I'm sure they might have X-nayed that. That's something else you can probably YouTube. If you just YouTube Big Boss Man hanging. It's pretty graphic. Even at the time, I was like, why are they doing this? Why is Undertaker suddenly infatuated with hanging people? It was disturbing. Even at that age and in the time frame of the Attitude Era, as raunchy as it was, this was something more serious. Like, this is somebody, you're actually trying to kill them. That's different. So, Road Dogg defeated Chris Jericho by disqualification. So, I don't particularly remember this program with Road Dogg and Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho had just debuted, and we all know when he did. Probably one of the more iconic debuts in WWE history. Interrupting The Rock and being the culprit behind the Y2K countdown. So he had just really been, he's brand new, fresh to the scene and facing Road Dogg. And he won by DQ. I'm going to guess that the DQ is because Jericho cheated to, or just used a blunt object or a low blow Road Dogg. I'd have to go back and look. But Road Dogg defeated Jericho by DQ. Then we get Shane McMahon defeating Mankind. How about that? Shane McMahon defeated Mankind. You know, Shane's a guy that at this time was absolutely a powerhouse heel. And aligned himself with Vince McMahon. And he was the prodigal son. He was part of the corporate ministry, which was yet to be formed. And this was also a guy that I think at the time could have been, if he wanted to truly be maintain an active competitor status in full time, could have been one of the bigger heels. And he was a heel, but kind of in a special attraction kind of way. And obviously he would go on to be there for another, 8-9 years before he went off and went to China and made sneakers or something. I don't know what he did in China. Or he was involved in like cable or something, wasn't he? In China, but he also has an affinity for sneakers. Weird facts about Shane. Moving on. Torrey defeated Ivory in an evening gown match. Let me repeat that. Torrey, the one that gets tombstoned by Kane in about a year, defeats Ivory in an evening gown match. Again, I will continue to say, imagine if today's women had an evening gown match. This is akin to like a Playboy pillow fight. It's bad. It's bad, but we all accepted it. We all accepted it. This was just part of the very male-driven audience that WWE was just sucking money out of, was scantily clad women on your TV screen, along with just blood and guts. That's the essence of what pro wrestling was from 97 to 2008, was blood, guts, and boobs. That's what it was. I honestly, and I can say this being serious, because I know that many of you, whatever, but that's fine. But the truth is, and some of you may feel the same way, that even during this era, I was a teenage boy at the time, mid-teens, I still was not watching wrestling to watch this. It still was not something that I would watch to go, oh, I can't wait till, you know, Torrey and Ivory hook up in an evening gown match. It still was not to me a draw. It was more of a distraction. If we want to see scantily clad women, we all know where to go. Pretty easy to find. Even in 99. Even in 1999, most of us actually still had dial-up, so, you know, things took a while to load. but we all knew where and how to get it. And I didn't watch wrestling to kind of get the half-baked version of it, right? I was more of a either give it all or don't bother. I'm in dangerous territory now. But my point is, I did not watch wrestling to watch this. I really, truly didn't. I was about Stone Cold. I was about The Rock. I was about just loud reactions, zany, wacky stuff going on, unpredictable shows, The Rock, everything. That's what I was watching wrestling for. And I still watch it for. And I'm glad that the women, obviously, have evolved and or at least been presented in a much more respectable way. And to their credit, have, I think, maybe taken over the men's division. You could argue in some ways, right? Check out that article on my site. You might be convinced. So there it is. That's the card leading up to the main event. And here comes some audio from it. I'll give it to you in a minute. But let me set the stage here. This is Triple H, who's the champion at the time, the WWF champion, with China facing off against The Rock with Shawn Michaels as the special guest referee. This is easily the biggest thing that I remember from this show. And with good reason, it's the two biggest names fighting for the biggest championship that the company has to offer. And a Hall of Famer as a special guest referee. And it's the closing match of the show, which means what you see last, you remember the best. So you have all that working for it, which is probably why my long-term memory has solidified this as the only memory that I have, or the strongest memory that I have from the very first weekly edition. I got to say weekly because you guys will all be, oh, it was April. I know it was April, the first one, but weekly. That's what I remember the most about that show was this and a single moment of this show because I was so angry and you'll hear why. So let's get to it. Let's listen to a little bit of this match as we live it together. The match starts there, and you forget about The Rock's entrance music. It was just so kind of laid back at the beginning. I mean, it was obviously evolved into a much more high energy theme, but the crowd was squarely in the corner of The Rock. We didn't know where Michaels stood at the beginning of the show. Michaels did come out and really play the neutral card slash slight hinting towards babyface. And so you kind of thought that this may actually be an even Steven match and that the championship isn't going to be decided in the hands of a referee, but rather the hands of the competitors. So this match lasted, let me see here, almost 10 minutes. It wasn't a very long main event, but this was certainly one that is memorable for just, again, one massive moment. And before we get to that moment, of course, let's take a listen to some of the audio from during the match.
Helmsley now on to confront HBK. And Helms doesn't want that ninth corner of the world, that ace in the hole, to be ejected.
Right, it's a conspiracy, JR. I told you it was a conspiracy. She should be out of this thing.
Triple H wants every unfair advantage that he can muster, because he knows that Triple H, he's going to need it before this is all said and done.
Uh-oh.
Ah, the DDT! There's a cover! The mask of the lights on! Shawn Michaels!
Oh my gosh, here he comes!
Sprinting down the rampway! Michaels' delay with China gave Helmsley enough time to regroup there somewhat, but the champion is in a bad way here.
China's gone.
WWE title in jeopardy. Anyway, they're seeing the man.
Shane,
what's he doing out here, King?
I don't know. The owner
can
do whatever he wants to.
So a little bit of audio here. China gets thrown out after a blatant low blow. Then Shane comes out, and Shawn Michaels is wearing his typical Shawn Michaels referee outfit. I mean, he's not even in stripes. He's the commissioner at this time, so he can, I guess, do what he wants. But he's in, like, I mean, super short, tight shorts that are like spandex shorts. And so Shawn had yet to, I guess, find God, which his whole life changed, and it was documented in his book, and came back in 2002 a totally new man. So he was still the kind of the Shawn Michaels of old, and not able to compete in the ring still. His back injury had been plaguing him for many, many months, and was not resolved, and was the commissioner. But it was a commissioner that wasn't there every week, so it felt special. So let's kind of move on here. Shane McMahon comes out to try to aid Triple H in this matchup. And, well, let's take a listen to how this thing evolves before we get to the close of the match.
And what a suplex by the champion. I don't like the son of a gun, but he's a hell of an athlete, is Triple H. What a knee. Perfectly executed right in the head. There's a lateral press. One, two. And the kick out by The Rock, a near fall. And now Triple H has the challenger grounded. The WWE title on the line right here tonight on SmackDown.
So there we have it. A little bit of a pause here. Things slow down a little bit. And it's amazing how easily you're able to absorb a story when it's not told 100 miles an hour. Amazing. That we all look back at these matches and think how great they were. And yet, they are in slow motion compared to today. I prefer, you guys know, I prefer the slower match type, that not painfully slow, but one that you can absorb what's happening, and every move means more. I don't need today's style to tell me a story, right? But that's my preference. Obviously, I'm outvoted considering how the wrestling product has evolved over the last 5 years. Certainly is much different than the product that we saw back in 2000. But here we go. Here's the big moment. The Rock scores with the spine buster, and, well, y'all know what's coming.
Ejected. That was all a ruse. Rock had this title won. A swear to you.
No, no, no. Wait a minute, JR. Don't jump to conclusions. You don't know that. Nobody gets up from the rock bottom and the people's elbow. Nobody, King, and you know it.
Well, let's take a look again at exactly what happened. I thought we were fixing to see the people's elbow.
What a shock. Did you hear that? One more look.
All right, so there we go. I mean, they're doing replays at this point. You know, it's really just brings back so many memories of that time, and particularly how angry I was about Shawn Michaels. However, had I smartened up to wrestling at that point, I'd only been watching wrestling for a couple of years. I would have known that anytime an announcer says, "And we're going to have a new champion," you immediately know what. Class? Yeah. The answer is, you immediately know whatever they say is the opposite of what's going to happen. So that the second, and the problem is, today's announcers are still guilty of this. Why? Why do they continue to do this? It's such a cardinal sin as an announcer. Don't tell me we're going to have a new champion, because now I immediately know we're not. Instantly. Without question. It's probably 100% fail rate for announcers when they say that. There's got to be a 99 to 100% chance of any time an announcer says those words, it's not going to happen. So, but I was buying in at the time. I remember The Rock hitting it. I remember Shawn Michaels hitting the Sweet Chin Music. And I was thinking, what? Right? I was angry, but it made me want to tune in next week. Anger creates an emotion of wanting to see justice. And what do you do next week? You tune in. You don't go, "Oh, I'm so angry at this product. I'm done watching because I didn't get to see my babyface win." No, because it makes the anticipation and the drive to see your babyface, your hero, get that victory and get revenge. That's, I think, what's missing today in some aspects. Although Randy Orton is certainly killing it. Seth Rollins is certainly killing it. But that is an overlooked and over, I think, it's an emotion that WWE creative avoids in fans. They don't want fans angry when they need to realize anger is an emotion that they need to tap into and use it as a strength, because it is. So the only shame coming out of this is HBK never got a program with The Rock. Had this it's a shame, because this would have been a perfect time for it to happen. With Shawn Michaels super kicking The Rock and costing him the WWF Championship blatantly, and The Rock not able to retaliate. If I recall, Shawn just kind of went back into hiding after this, and The Rock wasn't able to do a damn thing about it. And Michaels never got what he had coming to him, which is a shame, because that program could have been just lights out, and the things never lined up. The Rock and HBK never quite lined up for a strong program to be presented to us, which is a shame. But anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening tonight. Wrestling Nostalgia is always one of my favorites, and I know that it's some of your favorites as well. And I'll be back on either Saturday or Sunday. I got to figure out with my co-host what day works for them. It's either going to be Saturday or Sunday to recap everything that happens this week in wrestling. I'm thinking Sunday. Sunday's been kind of working better for me, so probably Sunday I'll be back. And again, a couple things. If you are interested in contributing in an audio capacity, whether you want your own podcast here to present a different view on things or do something different that we're not already doing, email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And you can also contribute in a writing capacity at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. If you are interested in writing a column or an opinion piece or really even capturing news for the site, if you want to be a news contributor, that is how you can do it. I'm very interested in hearing from you guys, because we want to make this show bigger, better. We're trying to grow at a time that's kind of slow for wrestling. Ratings are down at an all-time low, right? And now you have sports coming back. Granted, there's no audience, but you have sports or fans in attendance, rather. You have sports coming back, major league sports, that are now going to take even more viewers away from wrestling. So it could be a very, very historic time for ratings in wrestling land, not just in WWE, but across the board, Impact and AEW and others. So we'll have to see. But we're here. We're here through it all. As we eventually will get through this and be back to our normalcy. You know, people, oh, it's the new normal. You know what? Screw the new normal. We will eventually get back to the life we knew before this whole thing happened. And I know we'll be back without stupid masks in an arena packed to the rafters with screaming fans and no masks. And they'll be close as they want. You don't have to be 6 feet apart. So everyone's, oh, there's never going to be, you're not going to go back to normal. Yeah, you will. Because guess what? Vaccines are a thing. And once vaccines come out and it's safe and it's, you know, you have a high percentage of the population vaccinated, things will go back to normal. You're not going to live with masks forever. And you're not going to socially distance forever. So it's coming. I really believe that. So, all right. Anyway, tomorrow you'll hear your AEW and NXT reviews. And Saturday, you'll hear from our HSP team cover SmackDown and give a live review for that show as well. So, boy, a lot more shows. Four more shows coming to you this week as we round out the final days of July and just unbelievably turn the calendar to August. It's unbelievable that August is just a couple of days away. So, all right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Hit us up on our website or give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It does help us out in a big way. Tell a friend if you like the show. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.